Now stay tuned for To Your Health on WPVC LP Charlottesville, the show where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Now here's your host, MC Blair.
Good morning. Good morning to you. This is MC Blair. I'm here with Matt Rohde of Carpe Donut, of Carpe Cafe, and of Perfect Harmony. And we're going to be talking about those things. I can't hear a word. Right now, we've got a little technical problem. Try to get over this thing.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, okay.
Oh, okay. I can hear you. I just can't hear me. Okay.
And actually, not in the headphones, Mike. I don't hear you in the headphones.
You do hear me in the headphones.
I do not hear you in the headphones.
Ah, okay. So they're down. That's great. Good to hear it.
Or not to hear it. You don't hear me in the headphones.
Mm-mm, negative.
Okay. Well, we're working on it, folks. Okay. Let's try that. Yeah, now I can hear me.
Much clearer.
But you can hear me in the headphone?
No problem.
Wow, so it was this. Okay, we're good. Hey, folks. We're live. We're local. And Matt has a limited time, so we'll get right in there instead of the headlines. Matt, something new. You were on here, I guess, it might have been our first show.
Yeah, a couple months ago.
Talking about, yep, and talking about Carpe Donut and all that. But some new things have developed.
Oh, so many new things.
Yes. Tell us about them.
I guess the first step, right at the beginning of the year, we launched a local cafe.
Right.
At Studio X. The idea behind that was to obviously do good coffee, but to try to make a platform where we could do some of our food that comes out of our kitchen, but also to work with some of the other food producers in the area that
right.
are known for a long time. People like Dawn Story at Farmstead Ferments or Stephanie Maria at Ula Tortilla, this great new Nitro Cold Brew at Snowing in Space, just a place where a lot of local foods, and that's not our idea. Lots of people like to create good environments where local food producers can bring their food to more people.
Right.
So that's gone. It's been really well received. It's a great location over next to the Art Park at X. A lot of folks work in that building. So mostly doing lunches. We've got soup from Revolutionary Soup. These kind of elements start
right.
to all sort of add up to a nice dining experience. And it's a little bit bigger platform for us to play in. My partner on that is James Barton, who mm-hmm. started Studio X, and it's a beautiful co-working location there.
Well, I got to tell you too, I've had the paninis, and guys, if you are ever in that neighborhood, actually just go to that neighborhood and go to Carpe Cafe and have one of his delicious paninis and some of the other fine fare that's down there.
Well, reconnecting to a lot of the local food producers sort of led to the next new element that Carpe Donut is putting a lot of energy in. Over the last couple of weeks, people might have seen notices that we went live nationwide to have our donuts be available through Amazon.com.
Oh, man.
The timing of all this could not be weirder, because over the last couple of years, we came out of all the Whole Foods distribution we'd been doing and just weren't real happy with that relationship and how that the market forces that go to work to trying to be in more grocery stores are really hard on small producers. So friend Uday Gupta had this business, Perfect Harmony, of managing Amazon distribution. I worked on this idea of, could we make this work for small-scale local producers? Carpe Donut went live a couple weeks ago. Mad Hatter Sauces, which people in Charlottesville probably know, are going to be going live over the next couple days.
Right.
We're having conversations with lots of these same local brands because it's such a nice, simple, collaborative platform to try to help bring the food that small-scale producers, small-scale farms and value-add producers, to bring them directly to customers in a simpler format. As we're sitting here doing all this yesterday, we got the announcement that Amazon.com buys Whole Foods Market for $17-plus yeah. billion. Dollars. Not sure how to feel about that. This was kind of an unexpected development. I don't think it changes what we're doing.
Yeah.
I was actually already kind of a believer in the Amazon model of making it a real simple user experience. So if they can bring some of that magic back to Whole Foods, that'd be a great thing from my perspective.
Would. You're listening to Your Health here at 94.7 WPVC. We're talking to Matt Rohde of Carpe Donut, Perfect Harmony, Carpe Cafe, all sorts of things. But, of course, it all ties together. And so you're actually able to distribute the local real food, bypassing all the big boys.
Yeah, all the components of a really complicated food distribution system that we've been developing for the last 100 years. That, you know, in some ways it's amazingly efficient. We've got wonderful grocery stores. We've got lots of choices, but there's a set of choices that aren't readily available in our grocery stores. And that's not really a bug. That's kind of a design parameter.
Yeah.
That you need to be of a certain size and a certain scale to compete in those environments. You know, in the business world, they sometimes talk about those as being kind of hostile ecosystems. And you need to be of a certain size to survive there. The challenge is the rise of farmers markets again. People wanting to get direct access to farmers and small scale food producers that make things in a more small scale way. It just means that the grocery store is not necessarily meeting that need. And then maybe 15 years ago, along comes Whole Foods and says, well, we can help you find the connection to these. And not just Whole Foods, a lot of health food stores, a lot of health growth grocery stores start emerging. And it's the fastest growing segment of the food industry.
Yes,
and,
it is.
Because it's what people on a lot of levels, not just really wealthy folks, but people who understand the connection between food and health are looking for access to those kinds of relationships.
Well, even the USDA is giving grants to encourage communities to grow their own food.
Yeah, and the rise of backyard gardening again.
Absolutely.
And seeing the energy that's put into that is a reflection that there is kind of something wrong with how we buy food in the grocery store.
Yep.
If Amazon is going to end up being part of the next stage of that story, then as far as I can see, that's great news.
It is. I mean, and they encourage the small producer.
Well, that's what we're trying to explore now is can we use them and their main partners at, you know, UPS and the U.S. Postal Service to get food into people's hands? Because one of the big problems that a lot of producers and farmers look at is how people can have access to these kinds of products. We talk about food deserts in lots of parts of the country where there isn't enough density, there isn't enough geographic proximity to where the food is being produced to penetrate all the way into the inner city.
Right.
To get into rural areas where people of less means live, and they have the one grocery store, sometimes the no grocery stores that are easy to access.
And the closer you have the grocery store that's 8 miles from an urban neighborhood, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And 4 convenience stores 1 block away.
And 12 fast food restaurants.
And 12 fast food joints.
And a couple liquor stores. Yeah, that is market forces at work.
Yeah.
And that is where sometimes, you know, there's a couple big arenas where, you know, I'm a small business guy. I'm not anti-capitalist per se, but I don't think that the market necessarily always serves us on a couple key elements, and they kind of emerge obviously. One is the kind of food we eat should not be simply driven by market forces, or we're all going to die young.
Absolutely.
And the second one is how our healthcare gets delivered to us. That's a broken system as well, because, and I would contend, we've allowed too many of these simple market forces that are not prioritizing the human scale need to drive the decision making.
It's absolutely true. Absolutely true.
So if we look at those kind of commonalities, if we say, well, there's a couple things that are too central to our human experience, I have nothing to say necessarily about the healthcare problems, and they're maybe too big for me. But from the food perspective, I've been playing, it was our 10-year anniversary. So coming up in July, or when we get to the Albemarle County Fair this year, it'll be 10 years that Carpe Donut has been trying to make organic food available to people one donut at a time, whatever, you know, for whatever value that holds. It's given us enough experience to say, what can we do within the system as it exists? What can't we try to do? And what ways should we maybe be looking at changing that system if we want better access to a whole range of healthy food or real food alternatives? What's it going to take? Some of it is to look at maybe something like a grocery store distribution model and say, I don't want to participate in that. And that was the decision we made a couple of years ago.
Yeah. So actually we could, I wanted to ask you, what about the meat producers?
Yeah.
So would it be frozen or?
So we have a couple different models in terms of how we'll use Amazon. Mm-hmm. One of the things that allows us to examine any kind of a range of products. We've had conversations with the folks at Polyface. I'm talking to Rob at Hog Haven Farm. I want to have these conversations to say, I think we can deliver any kind of food if we're thoughtful about how we use the system as it exists. Because the system as it exists, what Carpe uses is we prepare the food that day and we put it into a UPS mailer and it arrives in 24 hours. And if you have a 24-hour turnaround time, the range of options that you might have in terms of how that food gets packaged, how it can be temperature controlled, and how it can be managed within a 24-hour window, you got a lot of latitude, of ways that could work well. If you have to wait 48 hours or 3 days for your product to get delivered to an individual, well, then that's not necessarily going to be practical for a lot of foods.
No, not at all.
We can get Mad Hatter or Peg Salt into your hands over right. any kind of time frame. But when it comes to things that really need to stay, you know, below 40 degrees for some period of time, or can only sit on the shelf undamaged for a couple of days, like mm-hmm. like a freshly baked donut, then we need to be able to move the product quickly around
Absolutely.
The country. It is a weird moment in time when for not too much money, I just ship product to California.
Yeah,
we sent stuff out last Wednesday, and it was in somebody's hands in San Francisco less than 24 hours later. And that's just a model that, again, give credit where it's due. That's Amazon that created that requirement.
They did.
And UPS that came and fulfilled it.
So they're going to put them on drones?
I'm ready. Absolutely. Let's use them for good, not evil.
There you go. Heck yeah, man. Heck yeah. So I know that meat can ship either frozen with a dry ice pack and all that.
Sure. Omaha Steaks has been doing that forever. There's lots of ways that we can move this product around that doesn't have to be cost prohibitive. I think the real question is, what is it that people are looking for? If it's forest-raised pork and they want to know the farm and have that relationship directly with the farm, the problem is that the actual sales process is really complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Navigating Amazon, real complicated. So you're asking about the Perfect Harmony project. It's really about creating a nice interface, not just that makes it easy for the producer, because, I mean, I'm using it. It's got to be relatively easy. But that it is somehow aligning the goals, the incentives between the person producing the food and the person who's going to help facilitate the sale. So rather than a zero-sum game between me and a distributor, which is kind of what I experienced before, where the more money they made, the less I had to make, or the more money I made, it was coming out of their pocket. Perfect Harmony is going to do a full sharing of information about what these costs really are between the producer and the distribution side. And then we're going to figure out what the margin is. We're going to agree on what that price should be on Amazon. And we're going to split that margin 50-50 between the producer and the sales team.
That's awesome.
Since we both need to make as much money as possible to make it work,
right.
or can choose to make less money to build some volume, we're all going to come to that agreement together. And there's not really a competition.
That's awesome. And then it keeps it in the money in the community.
Absolutely.
Which is huge.
Yeah, this is a Charlottesville-based startup. We're doing this right here. We can have this conversation, however, with anybody. We can go take a trip to Asheville, North Carolina, up to Burlington, Vermont, and say, who's got a great brand that needs a better way to get a direct connection to consumers? And we're particularly interested in people who are making stuff that isn't being made everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the big concerns in talking to the folks at Polyface is they don't really want to ship their product all over the country.
No, they don't.
There's lots of regenerative farmers out there trying to do it the right way.
100-mile rule, I think.
They want it within 200 miles. They want to keep their distribution there. And then I think that's something we can work towards. There are other products. I mean, not to toot my own horn, but go find another organic ingredient donut. I mean, there really aren't many available.
That's true.
So I'm not as worried about the geographic segmentation. I want to make that product available as widely as I can, at least at this stage of the game.
So you mentioned you've shipped overnight to San Francisco, basically. And I'm sure that costs more than, you know, 2-3 day shipping. So I guess it would behoove somebody to purchase a lot for that same.
Oh, absolutely.
Same shipping cost. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The more, this is, again, we come back to basic rules of
economies of scale, right?
Economies of scale and buying low and selling high. The larger the package that people can receive and what we're recommending, they're going to arrive fresh and then freeze them when they get there. We already know how to do that. We include good directions for that. So, I think that could work for several products that I'm already kind of exploring and having conversations with, that people would be willing to buy a slightly larger amount to bring the percentage cost of shipping down.
Absolutely.
Nobody wants to spend all their money on shipping the product. But believe me, when you go to the grocery store and you buy a bottle of ketchup, most of what you're spending money for is shipping and holding and the package.
Yep.
So little of it goes towards the ketchup inside the bottle that it's almost a rounding error. You know, the cost of bringing food to customers is about getting it there.
Yeah, especially
and
glass.
Managing that. Yeah, especially if it's
so
in glass.
So expensive. Yeah. So expensive. So, gosh darn, when do you foresee this coming into being?
Well, it's absolutely in existence right now.
Okay.
Carpe Donut is live on Amazon as we speak. As I said, Mad Hatter Sauces out of Charlottesville will be going live over the next couple days.
Oh, good.
I'm talking to 5 or 6 other brands right now, and I'd love for more people who are really ready to produce more of the product that they have. And what they're trying to figure out is, how do I get it to people? How do I manage the sales process? I've just got an underlying belief. Most people who get into the game of trying to make a business of making food, for lack of a better way of describing it, the way their grandparents would have made it,
mm-hmm.
being really honest and having high integrity about what they make, they're probably not often the same people who want to get into the business of selling it and marketing it and doing all those other elements.
Right.
They want to make more of that food. They want to bring it out into the world. Talking to Janet Dobbs from Agnes Very Very Bagels, the bagel mm-hmm. ladies at the farmer's market.
Ula Tortilla too.
Yeah, right. Talking to Ula Tortilla. These are folks who are really passionate about the food itself. They'll learn these sales requirements. They'll learn how to navigate, you know, the really complicated and kind of unfriendly environment of food marketing and food sales. But I got to say, if we give people an easier path to bringing their product to their customers, I think that's going to work really well.
I agree. We're going to take a little break here, and we will be back. We're talking to Matt Rohde of Carpe Donut, Perfect Harmony, and Carpe Cafe. All right, we're back. How about you?
Oh, I'm back.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
There he is. All right.
Headline time.
Yeah, darn right. This is To Your Health. I'm MC Blair, and I'm talking with Matt Rohde of Carpe Donut, Carpe Cafe, and Perfect Harmony Distribution Company, I suppose.
Sure.
We'll just call it Perfect Harmony. I have a headline here that I found rather interesting. Eating fried potatoes linked to higher risk of death.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me at all. There's only one thing that should be fried and eaten with any regularity.
Yeah.
That's a donut. Absolutely.
A donut, absolutely,
yeah.
Right.
Potatoes seem really dangerous to me.
It says, how your spuds are cooked is key to your health. People who eat fried potatoes two or more times a week double the risk of an early death compared to those who avoid them.
Is that a heart attack thing? Are they
saying it's a heart attack? Yeah, yeah, okay. yak, right? Heart attack, yak. That was the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. In 2014, Americans consumed 112 pounds of potatoes per person for that year, according to the National Potato Council. Of that total, 33.5 were fresh. The remaining 78 were fried or processed, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And the majority of processed potatoes are French fries.
Sure.
No surprise there. They studied 4,400 people between the ages of 45 and 79 over an 8-year period. So it's a fairly long study. 236 people died, and the folks who ate fried potatoes 2 to 3 times a week doubled their chance of early death compared to those who abstained from the fried potatoes, potato chips, hash browns, and any other potatoes requiring a fryer. And I think that's key.
Well, I got to say, though, and not to get all science-y, this sounds like a classic case of correlation does not imply causality. What is
absolutely
eating fried potatoes a marker for? What else was on the plate is probably as relevant as the potatoes themselves.
And oils high in trans fat were the major cause.
Sure. No, that makes more sense.
Yes.
And I eat my French fries with a very large bacon cheeseburger, and the next thing you know, we can blame the potatoes all we want.
Exactly.
But
yes. I know. You're right. Other factors, obesity, sedentary lifestyle, and high salt use plays an important role in that early death as well. But of course, now the National Potato Council, the CEO, John Keeling, said, hey, a medium-sized potato only has 110 calories, no fat, no sodium, no cholesterol, and provides a third of the daily vitamin C requirement with more potassium than a banana. And that's true.
Yeah, if you could eat a raw potato, that'd all be true.
Yeah, well, and the how potato is prepared will impact the calorie, fat, and sodium content, obviously.
Baked potato.
I know, right? Yeah, baked potato. And the other thing, too, is like when I do my hash browns, folks, and yes, I do, and maybe once a week, first off. Second, I'm using a local potato, which is a good idea. And third, the oil that I use is very low in trans fat. And I don't use much of it, so it's not a deep fat fried.
I see you with an
potato.
Olive oil, like a low heat fry on an olive oil, something like that.
Exactly. And then you can, then there's a acrylamide problem. And of course, for those that you don't know, it's chemical produced when starchy foods like potatoes are fried, roasted, or baked at high temps. That's the browning, basically. And that is supposed to be toxic to humans, acrylamide. Yeah, well.
We also refer to that as a Maillard reaction with meats, and that's what makes it taste good. That's
the
problem.
Right? Yeah, that's exactly right. So bottom line is, don't worry about it. Just limit it. Don't eat a gobs of it, and try to make them not deep fat fried in the oils that they use, you know, corn oil or whatever it is they use in those things. Peanut oil isn't too bad.
I'm working on having more of my salads not in a deep fried tortilla.
Yeah, exactly. And the next one was one egg a day boosts growth in infants. Yay! The perfect food. A study published on the 7th of June in Pediatrics. The stunting impacts 162 million children worldwide under the age of 5. And an egg a day helps them grow more quickly. New research shows that babies as young as 6 months develop faster when given one egg a day and have a much reduced risk of stunting, which is a serious problem. There's 162 million kids around the world. 80 children between 6 and 9 months given one egg a day for 1 year. 84 were not given the egg as a control group, and the egg eaters had 40% lower prevalence of stunting, defined as being too short for their age. Well, that's so an egg a day. It's kind of like the perfect food, right?
Makes perfect sense. Yeah, one egg plus one apple, maybe, and you're in good shape.
Yeah, egg a day, an apple a day. That's for the pectin, I guess. That's in the skin, right?
I don't like to give too much focus on this idea behind paleo, but there is something about asking the question of how we probably ate 10,000 years ago and what it looked like.
Yeah.
I'll bet we ate every egg we could get our hands on.
Heck yeah.
100%. And that would have been a base of a diet for hunter-gatherers. You know, you're kind of scouting around. If you can't catch the chicken, you grab up the eggs.
Right. Yeah. Or the ostrich. That feeds a family. It's something to do. I guess that's why dogs love eggs so much, right? The egg-sucking dog.
The yolk of the egg is that whole concentrated food package that's supposed to feed the embryo for however long it takes that baby to develop inside the eggshell. So it makes sense. It's like a super concentrated food source. It's got to have a good balance for things like brain health. Our infants are going to do just as well as the baby chicks are going to do on most of those nutrients.
And speaking of eggs, I believe you use local pastured eggs in your
donuts. We get our eggs from the local food hub.
Yep.
I believe they're coming from Shepherd's Hill Farm much of the time.
Yeah.
Our big priority is that those eggs should always come off of chickens that are living on grass.
Absolutely.
That pastured animals really make an enormous difference, both in terms of the nutritional value and also the taste. Like, I really like the impact that it has. We put a lot of eggs in the donuts, so it makes a big difference.
Well, it does, and those nice orange yolks.
It's a nice telltale. Absolutely.
High in beta carotene is the reason for those yolks. I had a friend of mine, I asked her, I said, you know, my eggs are orange because it's high in beta carotene. And she said, oh, I would never eat an orange egg. I said, oh, you're missing something.
Yeah, if you fed them to her one time, she probably would change her mind pretty quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. They said that they're not sure what nutrients might be the most important but evidence suggests choline would have an important role in growth.
We've changed our attitudes, I think, in a really good way. at what the role of cholesterol in our diet is. We used to have a real terror of eating cholesterol because mm-hmm. high cholesterol in the blood was seen as such a marker for heart disease.
Right.
Well, now, from my best understanding, triglycerides are a much better marker for heart lack
much
of health.
Mark.
And that eating cholesterol is not the same as having high cholesterol levels.
No.
Cholesterol is actually a really good food and an indication of a high nutrient, usually a high omega-3 rather than omega-6 level. These are all, it's complex, but that those are definitely at work there.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the cholesterol level, they found in several studies that older folks with higher cholesterol live longer than older folks with low cholesterol.
Well, I'd also say they're probably happier.
And happier, absolutely, absolutely too, right? So, we need cholesterol. It's extremely good. And the other thing is that if your cholesterol goes down, your body will simply make more because mm-hmm. it has to have that level. And we all have a different level. Mine's over 200, but my doc said that the HDL was so high that there's no way my arteries were getting clogged, so it's not just a number.
Well, just to give you a little backstory, because I grew up in one of these households where health food was a big thing in the 70s, mm-hmm. we would gravitate back and forth between a lot of health food ideas and practices, and then sometimes we'd have a Twinkie. So it didn't always be maintained in the same way. But there was a period of time when the cholesterol in eggs was seen as super, super scary.
It was.
And my mom got from somewhere the idea that you could offset the cholesterol in eggs by eating lecithin. Well, soy lecithin is one of the foulest products to stick in your mouth raw that you can possibly imagine. But the rule was, for every egg you ate, you had 1 teaspoon, just pop it in your mouth, of soy lecithin and choke that down with some orange juice or whatever. I can't believe I still like eggs after that early childhood experience, but I do.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing. I'm just picturing little Matt eating the lecithin.
Now, I don't know if you remember when Unlimited Vitality Incorporated was on the downtown mall. This was a health food store in Charlottesville when I first moved here. And it was just such an old school. But they had this crazy poster. I think it was Hervé Villechaize and Ruth Buzzi and T-shirts that said, right. If you love me, don't feed me junk. And I always saw that poster. I was like, that's me as a kid. That was me right there.
Yeah, that's it. That's true. speaking of junk, they found lead in 20% of baby food samples.
Oh, can we stop?
1 in 5. Yeah, I know. Well, we were talking about this earlier, folks. By the way, we are listening to Your Health here on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We're talking with Matt Rohde of Carpe Donut. And we were getting ready to talk about, I mentioned this about the lead in the baby food. And Matt looked at me and went, just feed them what you're eating. If they can eat solid food, just chop it up. Blend it up.
It is food plus blender equals baby food.
Absolutely.
It is not complicated.
Yeah, it's not complicated. And so if you're eating, your local food the right way or grown the right way, then your baby can have that too. You don't need to go out and buy a baby food sample or a jar of baby food because that's processed.
Absolutely.
And it's getting them, it starts them off on the wrong foot. A couple of weeks ago, we had two great professors from UVA, Dr. Seegerese and Dr. Kranz, and they are studying the first 1,000 days of life, which is important. Get your kids on a proper diet in that first 1,000 days, 3 years, basically, I suppose. But they said the Environmental Defense Fund, in an analysis of 11 years of federal data, found detectable levels of lead in 20% of the 2,164 baby food samples.
Well, I'm probably the wrong guy to be saying this, since I push sugar for a living at some level.
Yeah.
But I'll always acknowledge that sugar should be such a small percentage of our diet. And one of the things I remember hearing not very long ago was just the sheer level of sugar in baby food. With babies, you don't have a lot of complicated feedback. They either like the thing or they don't.
Right.
And since parents are going to often key to which baby foods they buy based on their children's willingness to eat it, it's like a race to the bottom to see how much sugar they can pack into some of these baby foods. I've tasted strained plums or whatever when my kids were really small and thought, my God, that's too sweet to eat. Because, again, we understand how sugar how the human body reacts to that. And babies are no different than big people when it comes to these things.
Yeah.
They're going to gravitate to the sweetest thing that you'll put in front of them.
Yeah. Well, the sugar just it sets off your opioid receptors like crazy.
Absolutely.
And, but they found most of it was commonly found in fruit juices, such as grape and apple, root vegetables, sweet potatoes, carrots, and cookies as teething biscuits. And it's like, wait a minute, what? Why would you feed your baby, you know, something that was processed like that? I think it's because of you don't know.
Where are these
you
baby just, foods being made, Mike? Are these made in the States,
yes,
or are they coming from overseas?
Well, they didn't actually did not say where they didn't identify brands, and they didn't say where it was coming from. They said that you know, obviously lead can, you know, mess with your cognitive ability and all that. They said they did not say where these baby foods were coming from. And of course, one of the baby food manufacturers weighed in right away, Gerber, and they said, we're fine. You know, we're under all our, you know, we're all our levels are acceptable. And that I never understood in the first place. Why is any acceptable?
I think it's really hard to grow conventional vegetables without some exposure metals.
Yeah.
We have a somewhat toxified environment.
We
after
do. Arsenic and
after several hundred years of industrialization and burning coal and everything else, there's just a lot of lead out there in the environment.
There is, and it, you know, it's in the water, and then obviously the water, soil, and all
sure.
that. I would love to do a study on one of these or some of these local farms that have taken care of their soil and you know, are into the carbon sequestration and all that to find out what's in those soils and is it lower than
We certainly know that organic farming is going to have a lot of advantages in terms of helping to clean up that environment.
Right.
But I think what some of the magic bullet is for sequestering the heavy metals is mushroom activity. Getting mycology going into some of these soil structures is probably the best way to lock those metals up. So yeah, there's a lot of work to be done in that area. Hopefully we're going to do it here. We certainly need it, but we could hopefully export some of that knowledge to other parts of the world where we've exported a lot of our wastes.
Absolutely, absolutely. So what?
So what's the upshot on the baby food? What's the plan?
Basically, I think the plan is a blender, food in a blender, just like you said.
The Gerber people are not going to be happy to hear you say that.
I knew a family where the middle daughter was not gaining weight, and the doctors, they wanted to pump her full of antibiotics because that, you know, gains weight, helps you gain weight. The mother said, no way, no how is that going to happen? And so they were a meat and potato kind of family, and she got this idea, and they were having roast beef and mashed potatoes and you know, broccoli and carrot. She just threw it all into a blender, blended it up, got it soft, and started feeding her. And, oh, she started gaining weight. Unbelievable, right? So she was eating the same thing and saved a fortune on, well, not fortune, but a lot of money on baby food.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Food plus blender equals baby food, right?
That seems like a good takeaway from that. At least until we figure out the lead and maybe the sugar problems. There are some nice natural baby foods out there. I'm sure there are. It's reasonable to have some of that, but it's that precautionary principle. Like that should not be the go-to.
I agree. We're going to take another break. You're listening to Your Health. We've been talking to Matt Rohde. He has to get on the road.
Thank you for having me, Mike. It's good to talk to you as always.
Always a pleasure, Matt. Always a pleasure. Thank you for being here. I want to thank Matt Rohde of Carpe Donut and for being a guest here today. And I want to thank all of you who download our show. I hope something you hear sparks a desire to know more. And just remember, participating in community activities, treating your bodies with care, and eating real foods are keys to your health.
You've been listening to Your Health with your host, MC Blair. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Be listening again next Saturday at 11 for To Your Health. The show is produced by Ben Chambers, production assistance from Mike Friend.